the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 63, recorded Friday, October 26th, 2012. Green Kool-Aid.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
Green Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. Thank you so very much for joining us. This week, we have probably the largest gathering of AV professionals that I've ever had on this show. So it's going to be interesting. First up, we have Chris Netto. He is the consultant, or a consultant, with AV Help Desk. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Next up to him is Harry Mead. He is my favorite CTSD. He's also an implementation engineer with Ultra Electronics Criticon. How are you, sir?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, whatever. Aaron Wilson, he is the AV ninja, as it were. How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
With us from AMX is the Vice President of Project Management. His name is Sean Robinson. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And last but not least, Nathan Lively, the pro audio podcaster from Sound Design Live. How are you, Nathan?
Hi, Tim. Hi, everybody.
You should actually, Nathan and I hooked up on Twitter and checked out his podcast. It's very, very good. He talks a lot about different live sound and stuff like that, so check it out.
Whoa, thanks. It's going to blow up now.
Yeah.
Got the bump.
The three people.
The AV Nation bump. Yeah, I'm going to have to move to a new server.
Lord. All right. So this week we're going to talk about Infocom 100 because it was just a couple weeks ago, and there's some things that came out of that. John Siaka reminds us that women are from Venus and guys like tech electronics stuff. And also, Elite Screens showed off something that I've got some questions about, and I'm hoping that you guys are smart enough to answer because I'm not quite sure what an acoustically transparent screen is, but that's what they have. But first, this week, the world of bloggers and technology journalists and just the media in general was all a flutter because Apple had an event. And whenever the Apple has an event, well, the world stops spinning. It just, you know, let's be honest, it does. I mean, we use some Apple products here. I mean, if I had to take a guess, I would say probably 50-50, maybe 60-40 on the panel here have iPhones or have some sort of iDevice. So their event was the worst kept secret because everybody in the world was saying, oh, they're coming out with an iPad mini. They're coming out with an iPad mini. Chris, guess what? They came out with an iPad mini.
Really?
So is this thing going to be a big deal? Is this, I mean, I heard one person say, you know, it's the, what was it, the iPod medium or the iPad medium. Is this going to have a huge impact on us in the AV world? Kind of like, I mean, the let's be honest, the iPad has, the iOS system has with AirPlay and stuff. Is this just one more device that is the iOS ecosystem, or is this form factor really going to have an impact on us?
I don't think it's going to have the impact that all the Apple cult guys are out there running around screaming at this point. I mean, it's a 7-inch tablet. Has the iPod Touch been an impact for us? I mean, essentially it's the same thing, except it grew a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another device, just another wow, you know, hey, it's Apple. And, you know, the only time that those people stopped you know, tweeting was when they were clapping furiously for their golf clap. So, you know, I don't know. The iPad is the iPad. It needs, you know, it's obviously the king of everything that's tablet, I guess, in a lot of people's world, and not mine. But, you know, it's a good product. But the 7-inch doesn't make me want to just run out and go pick that up.
Just out of curiosity, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it definitely doesn't want me to run out and get it, seeing how it's XGA, which Tim Cook skipped right over pretty quick. So the 1024 by 768 resolution is not very impressive for a brand new device.
Mm-hmm. Just wait 5 months, and they'll give you a Retina on that, and they'll make you feel really bad for going being the early adopter.
Yeah, and dropping a lot of money for the size of the, you know, for 7-inch panel.
It's not that much money. It's only $350.
Yeah, but we're not talking it starts at $350.
So it's $150 bucks less.
Yeah, but it's $350 in relative to what? Other 7-inch touch panels are out there are $200, $250. I mean, they keep going back to comparing that to the Google tablet that's at $250. I mean, unless you're a hardcore Apple, you're going to pay that extra $150 bucks for a mini version?
I think the price point they're going after probably, because I was confused about that too. I was thinking, you know, more of like a Kindle killer type of deal, but with that price point, no way. However, it does match up pretty well against the Samsung Tab pricing on their 7. And maybe that's who they're going for.
Well, they've been picking a fight with Samsung for a couple months now, if not a year or more. Yep. So why not?
So I actually honestly heard less about this release and this event of Apple's than I've ever heard of any other Apple event. In fact, I actually, until I saw the article in the show prep, I didn't know actually what all they had actually announced, because I never saw anything past, oh, it's going to be iPad Mini, it's going to be iPad Mini, oh, it's going to be iPad Mini, and then now I see it's an iPad Mini.
Yeah. Can I tell you, this is a total side note, the most impressive thing to me was the new iMacs.
Those are slick.
Oh my gosh.
Come on. They're just thin on the edges. They still take up the same exact space on your desk.
Yes, so. But it's thinner.
Well, you know, the beauty shot.
But it's just the edge. And you like how they positioned it just right. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting for him to do the side shot, and then he quickly went past the exact side shot to like a back shot. So it's like I don't know.
Oh, it's smoke and mirrors, but it's darn sexy.
It's pretty. It's pretty.
I was going to say, it's pretty. All of Apple stuff is pretty.
Even their adapters are pretty, yes.
Hey, I think the important question for me is, what is the power and video connection on the new iPad Mini? Is it just like an iPad? And if so, I don't really need to worry about it, because I'm already set up to be able to connect things to iPads, right?
Yeah.
Well, except it's a Lightning connector. Oh. So, mm-hmm. But it's the same as the new iPad, the new full-size iPad Lightning connector.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. Are we getting beyond the point, and I made reference to a Samsung commercial that says, you know, they make the best or the cutest connectors or the cutest adapters. Are we getting to the point, especially with Apple products, where the connector is a moot point? It's an afterthought, because they're putting a lot of their eggs in the basket of AirPlay, both with every iOS device that you have, and now with their new OS, you can put anything that you want, in theory, up on another display over the network. So is the fact that it's Lightning or Thunderbolt or whatever doesn't matter anymore.
We're going to bring this right back to an AV conversation, aren't we, Tim?
Yeah, trying to.
This is where where you're going to have this issue is with the hardwire connections, and in what I have to deal with on a daily basis on a corporate environment is those things aren't that easy to connect to when people are bringing them home from home. At home, your network, your system, that's one thing. You try putting that on a corporate network and going room to room, and the various devices that are in there trying to connect to it, it becomes a headache. So we revert back to the connector itself. You know, as AV guys, we will definitely go for the hardwire connection first as a secure connection. That's definitely gonna connect. But
okay, so let me ask you this. We here at AV Nation, we moved into some new studios, you know, getting out of my basement, which is always nice. And I'm getting ready for the show today, and I've got my iPad here. We got used to look at stories. And somebody on the network here in the building somewhere has an Apple TV. Is that what you're talking about, Chris, where it's not secure? Because I can see it on my iPad. It suddenly gives me the option. Where I can, if I wanted to, spit out, you know, all my delicious links just this person's random Apple TV.
You could if he allowed you to.
But it's sitting there. I mean, I don't have. I mean, is that what you're talking about, though? That security that you don't have that lockdown.
Correct. And who's going to take ownership? You know, who's going to take control in a conference room setting where there's 10 iPods, you know, and there's one Apple TV in the room right next to you? It gets a little confusing. If that was the case, I think IT people that are inside the corporate environments would have been all about letting these things out because they don't want to see the wires.
No.
Unfortunately, it's not an easy solution because it's looking for your iPad on their network, and they get all confused when it's too many in one space, and you don't want to add more work for the guys that are trying to support these rooms.
Oh, why not?
In our particular playground of secure government, there is no wireless.
No.
So, not cloud happen. And wireless connection and all that's a moot point. It doesn't exist. So, there's a whole swath that has nothing to do with any of that, so we've got to use any hardwire connectors that they've got.
So you are worried about the connector then, Harry, and anybody that's worried about security is worried about it.
Yeah. With all this bring your own device stuff, they haven't worked out completely how they're going to do all the secure for everything, so it's still wild, wild west on a lot of that.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's get out of the out of Silicon Valley for a second here and go to Washington because, you know, I love the FCC and they're my friend because, you know, it's the FCC. This comes to us from The Verge. The FCC will allow the encryption of basic cable. Dun, dun, dun. Here's my issue with this, guys, and we'll start kicking around the horn. A couple of different things, and I understand why they're doing it. You know, you've got issues with content protection and this, that, and the other, and I understand all that, and I would never want to say that people who create content don't have a right to control their content and be compensated for it. For crying out loud, we make content here, right? However, I grew up with the ability to go into, you know, hook up, you know, in my room when I was a kid. There was a simple coax. You plugged it in the back of your TV on your F connector, and suddenly you had channels 1 through 100, right? And the fact that the FCC is saying, you know what, we don't like that anymore. You're going to have some sort of box. You're going to have some sort of device that de-encrypts that and verifies that you're connected to an actual, honest-to-goodness device. You're not stealing the content. Harry, is this a huge deal, or am I just being, you know, a little nostalgic for nostalgic's sake?
I don't know. I honestly haven't thought about it a lot, but it makes it more of a pain in the butt for end users, because now say you wanted to have your cable set up downstairs in the big room, you've got HBO and all that other happiness. But you could always plug in a TV upstairs that just had your broadcast channels on your basic setup, and you could just have them, and you could just do that. And it basic cable, I'm making air quotes, has become so little. It's not much more than the broadcast channels plus a few other of the universally accepted free basic channels. I don't know. It seems like overkill, and it seems like just another way for them to grab more money for more boxes. But I'm just cynical like that.
Yeah, I would say it's overkill, because if they're worried about people stealing cable, that other magical line that runs next to the cable, and that's called power. So if the cable company can't backpull the cable or cut the cord at the pole, and they're having people climbing the pole with that, I don't see why we got to implement encryption to solve for that. People can steal power. It's the same. It's on the same pole, and some would say it's more expensive than cable. So, but I would say it'll cause a huge issue if the cable companies decide to drop analog and all digital is encrypted, and you got to have a cable box, because I have a slew of TVs in my building that all show various analog cable. We pay the cable company when they actually send us a bill, but we pay them for, you know, we have 10 TVs. We're paying you a negotiated rate for 10 TVs, and I just run my one cable to them, and they use the internal tuner. So if all of a sudden I have to install cable boxes, and some of which these TVs are pretty small, like in the fitness centers, mm-hmm. they have small little 14-inch TVs, 15-inch TVs. Where are you going to put a big honking cable box at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the same way. You have the small TV in a kitchen area or something like that. You know, the only choice I have in my cable area is a big cable box. My company that I subscribe to does not have the small, you know, Roku size box or Apple TV size box that I could stick to the back of the TV to even encrypt that. So I hate when people are telling me, you know, this is what's going to happen, but yet they don't even have a solution that is comfortable for people to install, you know, but that's just me.
Worry about people's comfort.
What? That's the thing is there not? Sean, I'm going to bring you in on this because here's the thing. You guys, just like a couple of your compatriots, have dealt with content protection the last few years when you guys started moving into digital.
Yes.
This is the way I see that. The content protection is really what I see this as more than, yes, I can definitely, you know, appreciate the cynical, you know, they're trying to sell more boxes here. But I think this is more the government saying we're more worried about the content people and their content protection and HDMI and all that jazz and making sure that everything's clear all the way down. Am I right in that, where it's probably more about the content protection than it is anything else?
Well, I'm not sure if it was really the government that's as concerned as the lobbyists to the government.
Oh, from same difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Bingo, but it's
just
Hollywood.
Just to make sure we're correct on, you know, who's... But with HDCP, of course, it's Hollywood, right? It's the MPAA. With this, it's cable providers. And, yeah, there's probably a subset of people out there that are taking advantage, and they want to try to extract as much revenue from the world as they possibly can. So, and I follow the rest. Having to put in these additional boxes, especially in tight constraint areas, right, is going to be a real pain in the butt to do. What I was happy to see when I was reading through the article, though, is that they're open to licensing the encryption into boxes such as Box E, because this is just another great reason to cut the cord. Yes. And go all IP. And so that they're willing to do that and license it, that's fantastic, because now you can have different methods of distribution. We're not having to deal with their box, which is not going to be an optimal solution coming from a cable company, as you guys all know.
Well, and that was actually the Boxy story is something we covered a couple of weeks ago, because you're right, because when they're able to do that, then guys like that and the Roku and the Xboxes of the world can start doing, you know, not only cable, you know, systems or cable channels, but also all the other wonderful, you know, online videos that we can get. So.
Right, and FCC made it clear that the reason they're doing that is they're wanting people to move over to IP delivery. Mm-hmm. It's just much more efficient, so, which we think is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But do we have the infrastructure to deliver that much IP to everybody?
Oh, I mean, sure. We got dark fiber everywhere.
Yes, we do.
Dark fiber. Okay. All right.
But don't get it next to the light fiber, or else bad things happen.
No, don't cross it. Don't cross it with
don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams.
Yeah, don't go into the light.
All right, you know what?
At least don't look at it.
On that note, AMC and Dish made up. Does anybody care?
Again, another reason to cut the cord.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, this is my personal opinion, not that of AMX. I need to make that clear. I'm a big fan of the cord cutting.
I appreciate that, and I also appreciate the sentiment, because I'm with you, dude. I mean, and here's the thing. Okay, so my wife is a big baseball fan, and we just watched the Cardinals collapse into, you know, and get into a field position. Congratulations, by the way, to our buddies Rich Fregosa and Johnny Mota on the San Francisco Giants, dominating. And then, are you saying yay too?
Yay.
Oh, jeez.
You're getting sympathy from me because it's my Rangers. They were.
Well, that was last year.
That was last year. Yeah. So, I'm still feeling it.
But
go Tigers.
Go Tigers, yeah. All right. So that's the only reason. That and football, which I'm a big Bears fan, that's the only reason why I still have cable. Seriously. Mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. everything else that I watch, I can do online. And if they ever figure out a way to do either consistently live over the network, I would do it in a heartbeat. Baseball's already there. Football's not so much, but baseball is there with their package.
Well, and Xbox offers a great, you know, the ESPN, that works spectacular. It's just too bad that they don't show more of the sports.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim?
Yes.
The whole reason that this thing was settled, the underlying reason with the whole AMC DirecTV thing,
yes,
9-point-something million viewers, the premiere of the one show that you don't watch.
The zombie thingy.
Yes, the zombie thingy that will remain nameless.
No, don't name it. It's The Walking Dead. I don't watch it. I mean, I like I told Chris, I've got two kids and I'm in grad school. What do you want?
DVR.
That's for Doctor Who. So.
Okay.
Sorry. So, but that would be why I hacked my DVR and put a terabyte drive in it. But that's another story.
There you go.
But that is the underlying reason for settlement. The people complained.
Yeah.
I'm right now in an area where Channel 11, which is the CW network, mm-hmm. is completely off in Jersey, or at least with my cable provider. And I've been watching nothing but preview channels that they give you on that. So for, I guess, over a month or since the start of the football season, I've had the NFL network, which is great. I'm a football guy, so I get to watch that. I don't miss CW 11, and they're still battling that out over here, whoever it is, Cablevision. So,
you guys are making a good point. This is one more reason to cut the cable, because it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, our NBC affiliate here had a fight with Dish Network. And for some reason, it always seems like it's Dish Network that's in this. And they did the same thing. Go ahead.
We have DirecTV, and their things normally go on like a week.
Yeah.
If they're having a spat with somebody, it's like a week before whoever it is knuckles under normally. But so it was amusing that this has apparently been going all summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. The entire Mad Men season, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Mad Men and Breaking Bad, according to the thing.
Yep. It's funny that they end up settling right before the chairman had to take the stand because there's accusations possibly of some document shredding when I was reading the article. That's one way to do it, ask the chairman to get up on the stand, and, oh, well, you know what, we'll go ahead and settle this weekend right before that happens.
Yeah, right. Hmm. Ooh, hey, I have a thing. I have a thing I have to do then. Oh, wow. All right. You're listening to AV Week with a bunch of really cool, smart guys, much smarter than me. Kristen O, Harry Mead, Aaron Wilson, Sean Robinson, and Nathan Lively. A couple days ago, this thing came out, and it reminds me of the X10. It's D-Link, and they've come out with broadband over power line adapters. It extends your home network over the power lines. I don't know where to start with this. It sounds interesting, but it also sounds an awful lot like a control system that we used to run on power lines as well. Aaron,
I still have that.
You still have? I'm sorry. I'm not knocking it. Real exactly. Hey, it was on an episode of Big Bang Theory, so it can't be all bad, right? Aaron, is this a good idea? Is this just a good idea?
I personally have never been a real fan of these devices where you can do broadband on the power lines, whether it be internal in your house or the external power lines. I guess with the way technology is progressing and we're running Cat 5 and Cat 6 everywhere, I'm kind of asking why, because if I'm pulling Cat 6 to a certain destination, whether it be to deliver my my video or my telephone line or just to get network there, it's like, why do I need to use the power lines? And we're pulling Cat 5 and Cat 6 everywhere, why not just pull it there? So I guess you could see it for maybe the less expensive route, but I don't know, broadband over the power line, kind of leave the voltage. I want to put the 120 volts in on its own little area. I don't want to put anything else on it. So, I don't know.
All right, Sean, does he have a point? I'm pulling cable. Yeah. I'm pulling Cat 5 and Cat 6 probably more places than I'm pulling 120, right?
Definitely, but for retrofit situations, you know, sometimes people aren't willing to pull cables down walls and it's a lot easier to plug something in. You know, these things have been around for quite a while, and I have to admit, too, I have a few, just maybe three X10 switches left.
No.
Yeah, I know, just three. I'm almost done with them, but and they work about 80% of the time, but older house. But, you know, I think another thing here that's this technology has never really taken off significantly is due to the enhancements that you've seen in the wireless space, right? So 802.11n and things like that. Even in retrofit situations, it's so much easier to hang an access point, right? And then you get coverage across your entire house. And now the bandwidth is fantastic. So I've had some experience with these power line ones, and they just seem a little bit flaky. This one might be really, really good, but with as easy as it is to, again, to put an access point up that's really reliable, I just don't know if it's really going to catch on.
All right, Harry, you're the one with the X10 here. are you gonna marry these two products together and you know convince Dawn it's a good idea?
Oh hell no! I'm trying to get rid of my X10.
Well, there you go.
Same here.
What are you powering with an X10 there? What are you controlling with it, Harry?
Outdoor lights. I actually have them running on running to an RS-232 interface, which goes to my AMX system that
there
I have.
In the room. So hey, when it doesn't work, it's X10's fault.
Absolutely,
just wanted to point that out.
Oh, that would be Sean Robinson, the vice president of project management at AMX. But go ahead, Harry.
Shameless plug.
I was gonna say I have so much old AMX in my house right now; it's not even funny. Anyway, When you're in the house, I mean, you might as well just use wireless and be done, because, I mean, the new round of wireless is going to be just as good as what we've got wired right now. So there's really, within the house, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of point to it. What I could see the technology getting used for is for wide-scale broadband for, like, a town. Or something like that. Hmm. Somebody running internet over the main lines and having just receivers, for lack of a better term, at each house.
They have tried that, but they had a lot of problems with it interfering with the ham radio operators. I don't know if they've resolved those.
They're old. Yeah. Who cares?
Well, you'll be surprised, because my father-in-law is... certified through the emergency agency, and when you lose all your cell towers, and who are you going to go run it to? You're going to go to the ham radio operator. So,
Aaron, I don't
have his telephone number.
Aaron, I don't want to make a point, but how old is your father-in-law?
He's close to retirement. So,
yeah, okay.
I may need his number if we get hit with the storm in Jersey. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
I'll send him a smoke signal.
Oh jeez.
And don't forget, the end of the world is here in December 2012. So.
It is. It
that's
is.
Right.
Actually, so
I'm raising courier pigeons right now to send out my messages.
Send out a white one, because winter is coming. one of my podcasting heroes is Leo Laporte, and he actually has a ham radio show with a guy here in St. Louis, Bob Heil. So I kid because I love.
The few, the proud.
And you're right. When the end of the world comes, there won't be anything left but ham radio operators. So
that's right. And cockroaches.
And cockroaches. All right, guys. a couple weeks ago, something that sounds really cool to me, but something I'll probably never go to, is Infocom MEA, because it's in Dubai. And that's freaking cool, right? It's an Infocom show. It's an Infocom show in Dubai. So... it's like, you know, Vegas on steroids, and with like really expensive stuff and man-made islands. So,
and no alcohol.
And what?
None that you can see.
I'm out. Yeah. So anyhow, back to the actual story. This comes to us from Installation International. It's an interesting idea, but I wanted to get some really smart guys on this, because I need to wrap my brain around this. Elite Screens, a projector screen manufacturer, came out with something and was showing something called acoustically transparent screens. Now, on the face of it, I think I know what that means. And after looking at what they're talking about, I think I know what it means. Harry, we'll start with you because you're my favorite CTSD. What does that mean?
Short version is you can have speakers behind it and it is transparent. The sound is transparent to the sound that's coming through them. Okay. That's what you do in a movie theater. All the front speakers are behind the screen.
That's what I thought. So so that's kind of cool though, right? Or no?
I mean, it is what it is. I don't know. It doesn't do much. I have never outside of a movie theater had to deal with anything needing to be an acoustically transparent screen. So it's not something that I would normally deal with.
Okay. That makes sense. All right.
It's a little bit more common in the resi environment, but yeah, in a corporate or enterprise or education market, it's not very common.
Although I would, with education, I could see, because the picture that they have on the website is a guy up at a board, you know, up at the screen in a conference room environment. So, all right. So it's acoustically transparent. It was what I thought it was. All right. Moving on to Infocom 100, the smart building wave. This is from Commercial Integrator Magazine. Harry, your wife went to Infocom 100. Aaron, I think you said some of your guys' went as well. So let's talk about this whole smart building thing, and we'll start with Sean, because Sean, you're our token control guy today. Mm-hmm. Is the whole smart building thing, and if you don't know, here's the nutshell version. Everything in a building all kind of talking together, and that's the smart building. That includes HVAC and security and the AV system and everything all tied together. Is this more about us as an AV industry trying to insert ourselves into other industries and play nice, or is it us as the AV industry trying to get everybody to play nice together? Or is it neither?
I think it's we definitely see a need, and because of what we do in the construction process, and then when we're bringing systems together, we are the industry that is bringing the most disparate systems together. And so we have a skill set in being able to do that. And then there's customers, real customers, wanting to have this capability. Where we've seen the challenge, and I've seen a big uptick. We've been doing this for a very long time, and I remember when we had a big Infocom splash around it with our RMS system tying things together back in 2009. A lot of people came to the show and they thought it was really interesting and really cool, but then we just didn't get much dialogue after that. But I can tell you, though, within the last year, there's been a lot of activity at the AV consultant level and customer level. And what it required, the challenge is, and you guys have talked about this before on this cast, the challenge is getting people together and getting other groups working together, and not only at the design level, but at the customer level. So where we've seen the biggest struggles is where somebody in a specific area, whether it be AV or facilities or IT, wants to do it, but then the other groups don't. And you really have to have a customer that is over, like a CIO or something like that, that is over all three of those groups, that says, we're going to make this happen, and that customer commits, and then it happens. Other than that, it makes it very difficult to get those groups to work together, and almost hostile in some of the instances we've been in, watching facilities and AV and IT go at each other. That's usually how it happens. But we're starting to see a lot more people talking about it. We've actually had some really cool installations recently at a university, where we've tied in the Tritium's Niagara system, but it was all because there was somebody up above those groups saying, you will work together to make this happen.
Who do you think typically are the ones driving that? Is it the customer, the end user, or is it some really knowledgeable consultant along the way saying, Mr. Customer, you've got all these systems, you need to have this?
It's a bit of both. Sometimes, and usually they're sold on the concept by a consultant. And then the consultant helps sell the idea, and they've been the ones who've been really, really passionate about it. And so they'll usually, from what we've seen, sell the customer on it, and then it's the customer who has to drive it through his organization to make sure everybody works together and it all happens.
In a perfect world, who would you rather do it? Would you rather it be the consultant, or would you rather it be maybe everybody? Like, no, I shouldn't say everybody, but maybe be, you know, the consultant or maybe even the manufacturers or the electrical or the IT guys.
I'd love to see customers pulling this through, because I think we would really see an expansion in it if a lot more customers were exposed to this type of capability and they pulled it through. That always generates the most business for everybody. But I think that's what the Smart Building Task Force is all about, is trying to, you know, evangelize this and with the AV integrator community also. Because the more we're talking about it, and then, of course, from a manufacturer's side, our responsibility is to deliver more of a complete solution. And you're starting to see that from not only our company, but others in the space, too. So where it is bringing together some more of these systems, making it easier for people to integrate these in as solutions.
Chris, how do you do that? as somebody who's probably, you and Aaron are probably the closest ones to end users, how do you get your organization to say, you know what, guys, our next building or our next rehab or our next renovation, we need to do this? How do you get everybody on the same page?
It is, it's not easy, but if I put my consultant hat on and I am working with the customer is the one that's going to want to be able to do this. And is, you know, as commercial AV people here, I'm going to have to pull it to the resi side. If they can do it at home, they want to see it in the office. At home, they can control their Nest through their iPads and through all that. So a lot of these executives and a lot of people in power have the capability to do it at home, and they can't fathom why they can't do it in the office. So in that case, we have that working for us. So to deliver that complete solution in a complicated office setup, you do need to, you know, you do need the customer buy-in. And I think it's the customer that will push it. I mean, I deal every day with, obviously, I'm on site with the customer. So I have the customer asking me for things, and I have to go talk to facilities a lot of time. And then there's IT getting a seat at the table. And we've had this conversation before, Tim, with Kevin Iacelli. It's, you know, the fact that we can even say that we're sitting at the same table with the same decision makers that were never invited to these meetings. Now we're starting to get these calls in because there is nobody who speaks the languages that we speak and can understand them. Mm-hmm. You know, so to be able to talk to an HVAC guy, to an IT guy, and connect your displays that are in the conference rooms and make it all work, you know, regardless of what control system you're using in a conference room, for example, the ability to walk in and hit a button and change your temperature in that room and allow for your lighting systems to be controlled and everything to be working on one system, and then having a main system that controls it all, there's definitely a beauty in the simplicity of that. But it's hard, man. It's hard to get everybody on the same page, because it depends on, you know, there's so many different factors that come into it, and it even depends on what region of the country and what politics you're dealing with, you know. So it's a tough answer, but I agree, it is becoming a hot topic, and more you're starting to see a lot more conversations about complete system integration, and when we more complete building integration, as opposed to, you know, my HVAC system, my lighting, etc.
Tim,
yes,
this was actually a, let's call it, a topic of intense discussion between AV Dawn and I after Infocom 100.
Have you talked since?
Yeah, have you talked since? Have you made up? Have you bought flowers, candy?
Yes, we have talked since. Everything is fine. But, yeah, because, I mean, she came back on a sugar high from the Kool-Aid at the Infocom 100. And I'm like, I just sat there and said, okay, that's cool. Well, I have a couple of concerns. First, it took us 10 years to get on people's networks. Mm-hmm. Just to get on the network. Yeah. Now we want to get on the HVAC network. Now we want to get on the building control network. Now we want to get on security's network. And it just, it seemed very daunting in that regard. Also, excuse me, the cost associated, the upfront cost, because we've talked about what Chris was just saying. We've talked about for years. I've been selling AV systems since the 90s, where we talked about, yeah, we want to come in and push a button and the lights set up and the temperature is set to what you want and all this stuff. And when you got down to it, to go an extreme example, it turned into an Extron push button thing on the wall.
Wow.
Because they didn't want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some pushback, I think, in getting over the initial budgetary issues to get these smart buildings together. I agree, we can do it, and we are the best as an industry. We are the best equipped to get this done. It's just convincing everybody, and I don't think it even needs to convince everybody else that we are the best to get it done. It's convincing the people with the money to let us do it.
Well, you knocked me off my sugar high, man. Jeez. I'm out.
I'm out.
It was thanks, Harry.
I guess we'll close up shop now.
It was 2 hours, man.
Harry,
don't go to Harry with an idea.
Harry Mead just closed the doors of AMX. Towel on you. Wow.
No, but he has a good point. In fact, I was looking through the notes that Mike Carter brought back from the session, and you know they're kind of stuck on value because it is very difficult because of all the parameters involved to show an ROI. But that makes it the selling process a little bit more difficult too. So it's up to us as manufacturers to come up with more efficient ways to deliver that solution that they're looking for.
This is just a complete all-around number sale. It's not. You have to get past the numbers, and you got to show the metrics. You got to show the value metrics that come associated with it. Yes, it is hard, but you know what? When you have everything working together, I'm sure that you guys and all the other competitors that are out there in this space can show the value of one system running it all. But then there's always the doomsayers that are like, you know, is there any redundancy in this? What happens if one thing goes, you know? And then people start thinking, Skynet and Terminator and all that sort of jazz. But
yeah, like building Mantis system, wow. It's a virus.
Between Harry and Chris, good Lord. Yeah. It's the end of the world.
We deal in reality one. Here.
Yes, step one, you know, is getting visibility, right? Tying it all together. And I know that was another big topic there is the dashboards and all the information and then the analytics. But there are tools now available for all those systems to be able to pull all that data together. And then you really don't get to figure out what kind of savings you're going to have until you measure it, and then you can begin managing it. But just getting that visibility is huge.
Okay, so I'm going to join the snarky, you know, doomsayers here. You guys are not AMX, Crestron. You guys are not the only ones who do this. From the other side, HVAC systems are starting to do this. Lighting system guys are starting to do this.
Security people are doing it.
Security people are doing this. I was sat in a meeting probably about 6 months to a year ago with a train manufacturer, TRANE, not Choo Choo Train. Where they were saying, yeah, you know, now we can control lights with this, that, and the other. And it was eerily similar to a pitch that I sat through at Infocom at the AMX booth. Right. So, and this can go to Sean or anybody else, really. How do we as AV guys go, yes, they can, but this is why we're better, or this is why we kind of bring everybody in? Is it maybe it's Chris's, you know, we speak more languages than anybody?
Oh, it's more than that, Tim. You just throw an HDMI cable on a table, a Cat 6 on the table. You just keep putting them up. We can identify all those cables. that HVAC guy doesn't know nothing but his CFC free on anti whatever. We're the only ones that know this stuff. I mean, granted, they all have their own, you know, languages, but we interact with all that. The podcast that I was on with you with we brought up the now it's slipping my mind, but we brought up an approved language or something that everybody's now adopting for HVAC, and that's something that other like AMX and Crestron are both working with already today. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we are the only ones. Tell me who can do it, Tim. How about that?
Well, no, and that was
the plumber.
Yeah, the plumber. Yeah, the plumber can do it. Yeah. It wasn't a rhetorical question, but it was an honest question because it's a question that your facility guys are going to ask. It's a question that your IT guys are going to ask when either you're not in the room, AV guys, or you are in the room and you need to be able to answer that question.
We got to get past the fact that we label ourselves AV guys, okay? And when you say AV, there's only audio and video in that word right there. And our roles have expanded. We're doing a lot more than just audio and video. And the downside to us trying to take control of something like that is, why are the TV guys trying to take care of this? Because that's what you're going to get when we leave the room. You know, those guys know projectors and TVs. Why do they want to control a building? You know, they don't see what we have to do with IT, with HVAC currently. You know, they don't see that interaction. And I think that's sort of the stigma that we get, and that's something we got to get by.
That's true. That, you know, it comes down to the brand that customers are looking at us as. And it's really, I mean, we're technology integrators, not AV integrators, but technology integrators. And I think the more we can do to promote that brand and distance away from just audio video is key, because that's what you're doing is you're taking all these different when we look at the AV industry compared to IT and billing management systems, you know, one of the things we've suffered from for, you know, forever is a lack of standard protocols, right? That's why guys like us and the guys up in New Jersey exist, right? But because of that, the challenges that you as integrators have been able to accomplish over the years was bringing these disparate technologies together, more so than any other industry. Whereas IT has had open standards, and they've had really well-defined standards for a very long time, and billing management to some extent also. So I think this industry, again, because of the history, has the optimal skill set to deliver this solution.
Yeah, okay. So enough of the – I don't know.
Sold.
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 All right.
All right.
I was going to say, I never said it was a bad idea. I just said somebody's not going to want to pay for it.
He has concerns. Concerns is what he has.
And I think we're all in agreement. It is not easy. I mean, there is a sale that needs to occur. There's value that needs to be shown. A value proposition needs to be delivered, and it needs to come. It needs to be delivered as a comprehensive solution. So it's definitely not going to be an easy road. No, but there's definitely opportunity there.
And I think it does come down to those three nasty words that guys hate to hear, and that's ROI. You know, the whole return on investment, because sometimes, you know, it's like, what is it? You know, solar panels. Well, there's an ROI. It's just, you know, your grandchildren will realize it. So, I don't know. Go ahead.
And nobody wants to be the guy who walks in and the heating's on in the middle of summer.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
So you're gonna get another finger pointed at you. So
okay. Can anyway. One last question about this, and we'll move on. That's the other thing. I have worked at institutions before because it has AMX on it, or it has Crestron, or it has Extron on it. The AV guy is the one that gets called. So mm-hmm. Whether it's a Lutron or it's a EDI or it's a AMX or whatever, if we start controlling the building, why should the AV guy get the call initially? And that's going to take some doing, is it not?
Yes, and I can tell you for a fact, because, yeah, we typically have the user interface, right? So you're going to see AMX or another competitor brand on there. That's what people see. And so no matter what's going on behind the scenes, that's who they're calling. Mm-hmm. 70% of our technical support calls have to do with third-party equipment, not AMX equipment. So now we're willing to help, again, because our customers are integrating all these technologies, so we're there to help solve that problem. But that is a situation. And what it requires is really well-defined interfaces between these systems so they can be easily diagnosed of where the issue is. And that's not always an easy thing.
No. All right. Now that I asked that question, I'll move on. One of our AV buddies, John Siaka, wrote an interesting article. I do regret not having a female on this podcast, this specific one at this moment in time. But hey, we'll move on. Women are from Venus and men love tech is the name of the blog. And John goes on to write that says, you know, primarily, and he even admits it's probably a sexist generalization, but primarily women's role when it comes to designing and getting AV systems up and running is they are the voice of reason. They're the ones that say, do we really need to spend that much, or can't we get a smaller one or a cheaper one or this and that and the other? So, gentlemen, Nathan, we'll start with you. Is this a generalization, or is John right? I mean, is AV, is tech more of the actual gear, more of a guy thing, or is it either?
Yeah, it's more of a guy thing. I mean, it's hard to ignore what we see every day, right? The kind of people that we work with. So I don't know the answer to your question really, but I do see that play out pretty often at work. It's funny sometimes when there's more than one client, or the client is a group of people, and the men are kind of like, yeah, hook all this stuff up, and then the women are kind of like, how much does that cost? And then so yeah, sure. I think that's probably true a lot of times, and it is sexist, but it is what we see, and you know, we kind of work with the things that we observe and take action on them. Yeah, I wish I had something smarter to say, but
oh,
I do see that.
No, that's smart enough. Yeah. Sean, is this a generalization by Mr. Siaka, or is that kind of what you've felt or experienced at least in the world of AMX, where the guys are all about the gear and the women are about the interaction and the aesthetics, but also about the price?
So, you know, we do have several women inside AMX who are very passionate about technology. In fact, we have several engineers that are women very passionate about technology. But if I pull myself kind of out of that world and just into the general world where we have friends and things like that, and my wife, not so much. They're just not into it, right? I can say that when I was installing my home theater and putting in the projector and all that kind of stuff, she was like, why are you doing this? And then, but then once it's all said and done and you got the surround sound and you got the big screen and all that, she's like, wow, this is pretty cool. Now, would she be interested in, participating in with me in a buying decision? No, she just doesn't care about that kind of stuff. And typically women that I come across, and again, definitely not trying to be stereotypical here, are just not that as much interested in it as men are. And when guys come over to my place, oh my gosh, they're drooling over all the technology, right? But when their wives, girlfriends, they could care less. So, and I don't mean to generalize. And again at AMX,
I asked you to generalize.
Yeah. So I agree with Nathan. I mean, I just don't see it as much.
I think it's fine to make these observations too. I mean, it's just, it helps us think about how we're going to approach different people at work. You know, I mean, when we have tech conferences on the events that I work on, it's all men. And then we have marketing conferences, it's almost all women. And when we talk to project managers, a lot of times, most of them are women. And I don't know, I think it's fine for us to talk about how to approach those different situations.
Oh, it is, because here's the thing. Like John writes about, he says, you know, the women are worried about the aesthetics, how it looks, how it, you know, some of what it sounds like, but also the cost. And so if you understand that going into a selling situation, whether you're selling to Resi or for commercial, you can tailor your sales pitch accordingly. So Aaron, would you like to weigh in on this, or are you going to stay away from it?
I'm not sure I want to weigh in on it, but
I understand.
but I have I my managers have been both the males and females, and I've noticed with the females, if you take off the "ooh, I need the brand new iPad Mini now" type spin, and you clearly explain why you need something or what you're doing, then they can identify with it better. Whereas, you know, I might go to Chris or Sean and be like, "I need this iPad Mini," and you're like, "Oh, I totally understand. Buy it." You know, there's two different wavelengths here. So I think that's probably why they're saying, "Well, do you really need this?" It's maybe it just wasn't presented to them properly. And I agree with everybody else on the panel that just if you generalize, you know, women are a little bit less into tech, but you know, men are not into romantic movies as well. Or I mean, there's all kinds of generalizations. So,
well, Tim, I'll make another generalization. Then you can see if other people agree with me. I feel like a lot of times making a sale to a woman, I'm interacting with a female client, I'm trying to take away risk and tell them about how everything's going to go fine and you need X, Y, and Z because that's going to make everything really stable. And so I'm trying to sell them a risk-free environment. Hello?
Hello?
Just kidding. But if I feel like a lot of times if I'm interacting with a male client or event producer, maybe I might try to sell them on some more risk and be like, "Hey, do you want to do something that's going to make you look really cool? Or do you want to be really loud?" I don't know. I'm trying to make it a little bit more exciting. And I think I just do that naturally because I kind of can see it in their eyes that they want like a bigger projector or something.
I can understand that. Harry, would you like to weigh in on this or not? Would you like to stay away?
I have so been sitting in the corner on this. All I have to say is look at my own household. I am engineer, CTSD, yada, 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 design engineer. Dawn, equally into audiovisual, but she's marketing, social media, that sort of thing. I think that's a very common generalization, and I think all you have to do is look around at the Infocom show, and yes, there are more women, but the women that are on the tech level are rarer.
I would agree with that. I think the engineers and the designers are rarer. They are out there. Absolutely, they're out there. But they are more rare. So, all right. Mr. Netta, would you like to weigh in on this, or are we going to...
I deal with these... I guess I'm going to take the other side of it. Being on site and doing some on site stuff, I get a variety of who's into what and who's not into anything. I mean, it doesn't make a difference if it's a man or woman when it comes to when you're talking about a conference room. Since maybe it's because it's not personal to them, it's not in their living room.
Mm-hmm.
They just want, you know, regardless of who is mandating an upgrade in a conference room, they want the tables nice and neat. And they want the technology hidden, and they want it simple and easy to use, and they're to the point. In an office environment, they're equal in that sense. But if you notice, look at the industry that we're in the commercial side, every commercial LCD plasma up until maybe the last year or two has been blah. It is black frame. You know, nickel frame around the edge, fat, chunky, who cares what it looks like, but it's made to operate, you know, 24/7 for the next 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You go to the residential side, you know, you got some slick chrome, fancy buttons, light that turns on and changes color to set the mood and the orientation. I think there's definitely a difference when you take it from the house to the office. And you know, only now are we starting to see, couldn't you get a thinner plasma for us or a thinner LED? Couldn't you get that LED? Because you're starting to get a lot more of the, hey, I have it at home, and I keep referring to that because I get hit with that every day. every day that we upgrade a conference room or do something, it's there's always that one guy or that one lady that will say, you know what, my TV is nicer than the one I got at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a better picture. It looks nicer. Couldn't you get a silver bezel? I mean, like me personally, I'm like, look at your image. Doesn't the image look good? Isn't it clear? Look how good your Excel spreadsheet looks up there. Now you can eliminate about 100 different columns. You can probably see it better, but that's besides the point. Maybe you can make your PowerPoint font a little bigger. In the office, it's one. Outside the office is another. That's my point. It's when you go into people's living, man, and into the living space, it's a whole another ball game. And I think that's where John's coming from. From my end of the spectrum, I see from my work end, I don't see it. They're all pretty much flatline when it comes to that. They all want the same thing.
And I think you also hit on something that we hit on earlier, where it, a lot of times anymore, it is where the residential is influencing what happens in the office and in the commercial realm. So whether that is the iPad Mini, or you know how things look and interact with each other. So. All right, gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to AV Week and for being on. Nathan Lively, he is the pro audio podcaster at Sound Design Live. How can people get a hold of you, sir?
SoundDesignLive.com.
All right, very good. Mr. Sean Robinson, the Vice President of Product Management at AMX, thank you so much for coming on, sir.
Thank you, Tim. It's been great.
And how can people get a hold of you, follow you, do whatever, just go to the AMX website, or how would you like to, where would you like to point people?
So all over the social media space, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube as AMX Talk. So just look up AMX Talk on any of those, and even Pinterest now. So
pretty cool. You can
get the latest.
Was AMX already taken?
There's the AMX, the AMC AMX Javelin car. If you ever search AMX on Google, you will see different things that pop up. So,
really?
Yeah, usually it's, yeah.
AMX Javelin car. Okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah, but yeah, hey, we've had a lot of new things we brought to the market over the last year and a half. So AMX is lots of great new stuff. If you guys haven't checked us out in a while, please do so. I'd encourage you to do so. So, but AMX Talk, ton of stuff out there on YouTube and other channels. So check us out.
The sexiest touch panel on the market, period.
Thank you very much.
And I have friends that work other places, and I'll still say that. Aaron Wilson is the AV Ninja. Thanks so much, sir. How can people get a hold of you?
I don't want to be gotten a hold of.
All right. So. He's an. I'm sorry. I forgot. You're a ninja.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you search for Aaron Wilson on LinkedIn or Google+, you'll eventually find me. But at the moment, I'm secretly hiding away to not be bothered.
I understand. All right, Harry Mead, my favorite CTSD. He is the implementation engineer at Ultra Electronics Criticon. Thank you so much, sir.
Not a problem.
And would you like to give people your Twitter or whatever?
Sure. I will give the... you can look me up by name, Harry Mead, on LinkedIn or on Twitter. Mr. AV Dawn.
I'm sorry, that just cracks me up. All right. It almost salves the wound from you getting your CTSD and me not. Last but not least, Chris Netto, he is a consultant with AV Help Desk, and you are more places than anybody I know. So give people everything, if you would, please, sir.
LinkedIn, Twitter, you can find me there. You can find our company website at avhelpdesk.com. And when you look for me on Twitter, it's Chris_Netto. If you just do Chris Netto, you'll get some Australian singer. You don't want that. That's not me.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, that's not me.
Okay. I'll leave you. And also the red band and the blog and everything. Don't forget that. So
I got a ton of stuff going on with that sort of stuff. But more importantly, there's some big news coming out from AV Help Desk next month. So we're pretty excited about that. I'm sure you'll be in the know, Tim, because you are just as equally out there as everybody else. So yeah. Please follow Tim.
Yeah, you should follow me if you'd like. It's on the Twitter. It's TD Tim David Albright, ALBRAGHT. But more importantly for me and everybody here at AV Nation, go by the website, avnation.tv, avnation.tv. You can find us on Google, on Facebook. We have a Twitter account, AV Nation TV. Also on LinkedIn, if you would, please. We have a group on LinkedIn. Join it. Talk you know, there are other people that are on there. Chris is on there. Mm-hmm. We'll post our not only this podcast but others as well. Our education show, the live show that we do, and others, the DIY. Also, if you would please come by the website and check out those podcasts. Plus, you can also find us a couple other places. So check out. I already said the Facebook, didn't I? All right, I'm gonna start being quiet now. So. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for listening. That's all the time we have for AV Week.